The Fan on Demand. Baseball Central on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
All right, welcome to Baseball Central for Tuesday. Jeff Blair and Joe Siddle, we are brought to you, as always, by Home Hardware. Toronto Blue Jays beating the Chicago Cubs 8-0, Joe, in the series opener last night. Marcus Stroman, 9 innings, 3 hits, 93 pitches, and honest to God, I looked up at one point and I think it's 78 pitches, and I just kind of shook my head. A lot of balanced offense for the Blue Jays. Jose Bautista gets his 200th home run, the fifth Blue Jays player to hit 200 home runs with this team. He will join us, by the way, at 12:40. But at the end of the day, Joe, a lot of talk after that game about Marcus Stroman. And let me ask you this. If Marcus Stroman was 6'3", I guarantee you we'd be talking today. We'd be throwing out the usual things about, well, you know, you can never tell with prospects. There's always going to be some regression, yada, yada. But if Marcus Stroman was 6'3", I bet we'd be having the discussion today. Could this guy be a staff ace? Could this guy be the stud starting pitcher? And we're not going to be able, and whatever you may think about the guy's height, Joe, people aren't going to be able to go there with a guy who's 5'8", are they? They just aren't.
There's a reason why teams draft big guys, and I think as pitchers, and I think the biggest reason is because of longevity, and you feel that they can withstand the rigors of a long schedule. And over the years, there just hasn't been a ton of shorter statured quality type pitchers in the major leagues. Has there been some? Absolutely. But that's kind of the I don't want to say misnomer, because really it's somewhat true. Now, does that mean Marcus Stroman cannot go on and have a tremendous big league career? Absolutely not. And if anybody's going to do it, it's Marcus. And what we've seen so far has to be very exciting for the Blue Jays, and he did it again last night. His stuff is electric. I don't care how tall you are. He is, when he's got his stuff going on, and last night he had that fastball command again, and that's so key for me because he can go to both sides of the plate with it. That two-seam fastball has just been outstanding. He's got nice movement on it. It's a newer pitch for him. But for me, the finishing pitch is the curveball, and he had that rotation going again. He lost it for a couple starts there, and when he loses that, now he's got a kind of fight with his B game, I like to call it, as a catcher, and you have to try to get creative and maybe find something with the slider or the cutter or the changeup, and he's just not quite the same. But when he's got that curveball going on with that fastball like he did last night, he was getting strikeouts with both those pitches. He's putting guys away with the curveball, but then he'll run that two-seamer in on lefties as well, started in off the plate, bring it back. He was real good. He was locked in last night.
It's Baseball Central at noon with Jeff Blair and Joe Siddle. Marcus Stroman told us last night after the game that he was lying in bed after a start, had a baseball in his hand, and he was fooling around with grips, just staring up at the ceiling, fooling around with grips. He said he found one that was really uncomfortable, but for some reason it was uncomfortable, but it was comfortable at the same time. It felt right. He said, I took it out to the field the next day, threw it, two-seamer. Stuff actually happened that way in baseball.
I'll tell you, how many times have you seen, if you're watching on TV and you'll see pitchers sitting in the dugout and they've got a baseball in their hand. They just tend to do that. Watch them at their lockers sometimes. They just got a baseball in the hand a lot of times. They're just playing with it, holding it, rolling around the fingers. I've seen guys on bus trips back in the minor leagues. They're always kind of tinkering. And if pitchers are good pitchers, they usually need something more to become even better, to be great pitchers. It sounds like maybe Marcus found a little something here. You can teach a two-seam fastball. Every pitching coach in the world teaches a two-seam fastball. Just some guys can't get it to do what other guys do. A lot of pitching coaches are teaching the cutter now. A lot of pitchers are throwing cutters now. It's a big pitch right now. Does everybody get it to cut like Mariano Rivera? Absolutely not. If it was that easy, everybody would be throwing it. It's just not the case. So it's one thing to tinker and find something, but it has to work. In Marcus's case, it looks like he's really found something, because that two-seam action, think of Aaron Sanchez, and he's doing it at 98 miles an hour sometimes. I mean, that's like another pitch, a four-seam fastball, and then that two-seam fastball. That's like two different pitches for me. What a weapon.
Yeah, and it's because I always, anytime I think about that, I think of covering Dennis Oil Can Boyd is 1 year with the Expos, and he used to
say that, you know, he said, I got 14 pitches, and he'd rattle off all these pitches. And he said, and then I got the kitchen sink pitch. He says, I don't know what it does, but they can't hit it, and I hold it differently all the time. And but he was making the point that, you know, and this is back then, and I think we're so used to athletes now being programmed to do stuff, and you know, it started at a young age and just kind of gradually build up and do things one way and be consistent. And I remember Oil Can saying, everybody fools around. He said, during games, you'll throw a pitch that, you know, wow, that's kind of neat. I don't know if I can ever throw it again. But I just found it interesting. And one of the things I noticed about Marcus Stroman very early, Joe, and I know you've had a chance to talk to him as well, but Larry Milson, who has covered baseball for a long time, he was at the Globe and Mail. He now covers baseball for the Associated Press and sometimes for MLB.com as well, talking about being able to talk to Stroman about pitching. And we saw that in spring training. There was one time you have a discussion with him. He understands what he's doing, doesn't he? He understands. I'm not going to turn it into this guy who understands the art of pitching and could write a book and all that. But he has an idea, is what baseball people would say. He's not just out there throwing. He's got an idea, doesn't he?
He's a bright kid. And I know the first time I talked to him in spring training, just getting to know him and watching him pitch once or twice and getting a feel for his stuff and what it's doing. And when I spoke to him and I talked about him going to college and what a good decision that was, and he said it was a good decision. His parents really backed the education. I think there's something to be said for that. The kid's a little bit more mature than others out of signing out of high school. It doesn't take them as long to get to a higher level because of the experiences that they had in college pitching at a big program like Duke. And I think that all helps. And Marcus is the type of kid that he's smart enough and intelligent enough that he is one of those pitchers. I use the term figure things out. Well, pitchers need to figure things out on the mound a lot by themselves. And that goes for the days when you don't have your A game. And it goes for when you're battling through the minor leagues. I know as a catcher in the minor leagues for years, guys are always tinkering. Like we just talked about, what is that one pitch? Maybe it's the cutter. Maybe it's a two seamer, something that has to help me miss barrels and get people out. And Marcus absolutely fits in this category. And when I spoke to him in spring training, the one thing that really impressed me, he throws a slider and a curveball.
Mm-hmm.
Now, he throws many more curveballs than he does fewer sliders, but it's because when it's good, it's really good. But what he'll do and what he said is he'll find that slider grip maybe that was working for him really well last year, and it happened a few starts ago, and he may go with that more. Mm-hmm. So he can do that on the fly. It's almost like changing on the fly and adapting and adjusting. That's what veteran pitchers do, and we're seeing this out of a real young kid, and that's very encouraging.
The game ended last night with Ryan Goins making an unbelievable barehanded catch of a ball that it was like watching a cue ball. It was like watching a trick pool shot. The spin on the ball was going away from him. He ran in, he reached out, plucked the ball out of the air, threw to first, got the out, game over. Stroman just kind of stood on the mound. He had his arms spread open like that. Like, where did that come from? Look, the same logic that says to me that Pilar and Ghost have to be in the outfield every day from this point forward says to me that Ryan Goins has to be at second base every day from inning one to inning nine this point forward. Now, there are going to be exceptions, obviously. There are going to be parts of the game where offensively you're going to have to make a move for Ryan Goins. But the more I see him in the field, he has to be. It has to be, Joe, it's got to be a game-breaking offensive situation for me to take that glove out of the lineup. It really does.
Absolutely. Couldn't agree with you more. He has to play second base every day. It's almost like it's a different team, the way he settles the offense. And I'm going to go so far as to say that he almost has the impact on the Blue Jays defense in the infield like Brett Laurie does when he's at third base.
Mm-hmm.
Now, can you imagine him at third base and Goins at second base? Now, Danny Valencia is doing a very nice job, just by the way. But Ryan Goins has really done that. He just settles things in. He makes all of these plays and more. I mean, he makes all the plays, of course, but then he makes plays like that last night. Now, that's kind of a comical play to end a ball game by. Mm-hmm. Us got jammed so much by Stroman's pitch there, and the way it spun. But, you know, it's comical, but at the same time, not everybody makes that. And it's amazing that his athleticism to react to that ball and barehand it and come up with a play. It's kind of one of those, not a blooper or a blunder, but a plays of the week. But he just does a lot of things that solidify that defense, and boy, does that help a pitcher.
Well, it not only helps a pitcher. Look, if we're going to go with the idea that Jose Reyes is going to be the Jays shortstop for the next however many, 2-3 years, I think you're going to have to as an organization, decide you're going to have to maximize your range at second and third. And I'm not going to turn this into dumping on Jose Reyes, but fact is there are balls he doesn't get to that he used to get to. And if I'm the Blue Jays, I've got to think about that in the offseason. I've got to get somebody who can maybe cut down the area Jose Reyes has to operate in. And I can do that. If I've got Brett Laurie at third base, I can do it if I have him and Ryan Goins at second.
Well, I think it really helps at third base. You know, the second baseman going up the middle and making that backhanded play and flip it, maybe on occasion.
I think, guess if Jose Reyes is going over there, you're in big trouble.
The third base position, I think, is key. And we saw it earlier in the year. Juan Francisco certainly does not provide the range that even Danny Valencia's right now, especially on balls to his left. And that can really help because if Jose's got a really range to his right, to his backhand, that's a tough play for a shortstop anyway. His arm is great enough to get it there, but it's just a matter of getting to the baseball. But you put Brett Laurie back in at third base and Goins at second right now, and then if Valencia is that kind of swing guy, he can play some first base, he can come off the bench, and he's shown that he's done a pretty good job. So he's auditioning pretty well for next year as well.
It's Baseball Central at noon. Jeff Blair and Joe Siddle. Jose Bautista will join us at 12:40. We mentioned yesterday's game, balanced offense from the Blue Jays. Donner Navarro 2-for-3 with a couple of RBI, his 64th and 65th RBIs. Adam Lind 2-for-4 with a double. Kevin Pillar 2-for-4 with a double. You know, Donner Navarro at the end of the year is going to have some pretty decent offensive numbers for a catcher. And he's a guy that, and we've talked a little bit about his play calling and gone back and forth in that. But he very quietly has emerged. I wouldn't say he's emerged in September, but he's very quietly become a guy you want up in the clutch in September. And for a catcher that a lot of people were wondering coming into the year, would he be able to hold up under the, you know, the duress of playing a whole season? This is a pretty good finishing kick for him.
It sure is. And he earned that last year by having such a good season in Chicago, and the Blue Jays rewarded him with a 2-year contract here in Toronto. I've changed my tune a little bit on Deanna. Earlier in the season, I was the first one to say and critique him on his calling.
That game calling with McGowan when he didn't call for the fastball?
I thought he was very much an off-speed type game caller in key situations, especially with guys with good arms like a McGowan. That's one example. Jay Happ was another one. And I've really seen a transformation here, and I'm sure this is something that maybe was addressed. And boy, what Deanna Navarro is doing behind the plate now in terms of that game calling, they had a really nice groove going on last night, Deanna with Marcus Stroman, and it's been going on for a while. And I've really changed my tune. I see Deanna as being a more aggressive game caller now. He's mixing in the off-speed pitches, of course. Now, you can't question every pitch a catcher calls, right? But just in general, I can see now the rapport. It's there now. Marcus and Drew is doing, and you like to make it with all the pitchers and with Hap, but it's gotten a lot better, I think, and he is much better behind the plate, I think, in terms of game calling. I still think Deanna can at times take balls out of the strike zone. Everybody has their strengths and weaknesses. Nobody's perfect, but what he has brought to this team and what especially he's done offensively, I'm going to argue that Deanna Navarro might be a leader in this on this club.
Oh, absolutely.
He's quiet.
That's where I was going.
He's very quiet and unassuming. But I talked to Deanna about what you just talked about, the workload. And now he's getting up there in games. And John Gibbons said in spring training, we're going to have to protect him. He hasn't played over 100 games in a long time. So we got to protect him so that he's strong down the stretch. And I talked to Deanna in Boston about this. We were walking in the ballpark. And he pointed to his head. It's right here. It's mental. He believes it's a mental. And if that's what he believes, great. Win that mental game. And that's what he's doing right now.
You really do need a certain type of catcher to work with young pitchers, don't you? I mean, it's not every veteran catcher works well with young pitchers. And I thought last night in the ball, the first at bat of the game where the balls hit right up the mound and Stroman's knocked ass over tea kettle and he gets up and he's okay. And Navarro goes out and pats him in the bat and then dusts him off. And everybody starts laughing at that point. There was something in that byplay between the two of those guys that suggested to me that there's a real sense of caring between Navarro and Stroman. And it's funny, I think back to some of the guys I covered with the Expos. I mean, you were there, Fletcher was there, a lot of guys. And there really at times when you get down to it, Joe, it's caring that's really important with a young pitcher, with any pitcher, but especially with a young pitcher. It's the I care about how you're doing that really can make a difference for a young guy, isn't it?
Well, I think DeAndre's the most caring catcher in all of baseball. If you watch him, how many times you'll see foul tips off the umpire and he puts his hand on, hitters will come up to plate, he puts his hand on his shoulders. Quite comical, actually. But absolutely, I think we've talked extensively about the importance of that pitcher-catcher relationship. And now you've got DeAndre Navarro as the veteran number one catcher on this club, and what's turned out to be somewhat of a young rotation with Hutchison and and Stroman, and having those guys, exactly, they're young pitchers. And I don't want to say you have to coddle them, but you have to guide them along.
Sure.
They have great stuff. They're still learning to pitch at the major league level. DeAndre Navarro is a veteran. He knows what it takes to pitch successfully at this level. And I think that's a little bit of a combination too. He's coming to a new team this year. And I think the first thing in spring training I talked to him about, what is that like? You're coming to a new team as a catcher. You've got... And you know what he said? I said, you've got like 11 and 12 pitchers to learn, to figure out not just what they throw. He said, to learn their personalities, their character. How are they wired? What's their makeup like? Because you got to know which guy you can go out to the mound and get in his face, or the guy that you have to go out in the mound and pat him on the back and say, hey, you're doing okay, even though you just gave up three line drives. And that's very important. You almost have to be that psychologist behind the plate. But DeAndre said, not just 11 or 12. He said he's got 20, 25. He wants to make sure he knows all the potential pitchers that may arrive in Toronto at some point during this season. So that right there speaks volumes about how much he does care and his veteran presence.
Tonight, by the way, it'll be Mark Burley on the mound for the Blue Jays against Jake Arrieta, who I guess by process of elimination is sort of the veteran presence on the Chicago Cubs staff. Tomorrow, game three of the series will be Drew Hutchison against Kyle Hendricks. Wanted to talk a little bit about the Cubs, Joe, because they come in with a reputation of an organization that's 2 years away probably from being where they want to be, but they've got a they've got an embarrassment of riches in terms of offensive players. We saw Jorge Soler last night, and I watched him taking batting practice, and I've seen him on TV. I've seen a couple of his games on TV a little bit, but I mean, I haven't really focused on. Saw him in batting practice, saw him during his first at bat. The first thing I thought of was Vladimir Guerrero, maybe an inch taller than Vladdy, but as Eric Hinsky told me yesterday, I wrote a piece with Hinsky on sportsnet.ca. He's a Cubs first base coach. He said the pitch hasn't been invented that he doesn't think he can hit. I can't hit it. There are pitches he's never going to get, but right now he thinks he's got a shot at it. And the difference, that's what Vladdy was like. The difference is that Vladdy, to the day he retired, was hitting pitches that no one thought he could ever hit.
Foot and a half off the plate. This is an exciting young team, and I'm sure that was a great conversation with Hinsky, and I read your piece. And you have to be excited when you have this kind of youth and the power and the way these kids swing the bat. Now, you watch a game like last night, I'm sure Marcus Stroman would have pitched well against a lot of major league teams, but boy, did this ever play into his hands, pitching against a Cubs team that likes to swing the bat freely. They swung the bat early in the counts, and that was he had them eating out of the hands, quite frankly. And this is a team that they have trouble getting on base. They have they don't walk. They don't get on base. They slug the ball is about the one thing they do well in this National League. But they have trouble with everything else, and they therefore have trouble scoring runs. And when that type of free-swinging club is up against a Marcus Stroman like that with his A game, as I said, most teams may have not had much success last night, but the Cubs had no chance. He was just dominant. And I think part of it was, of course, how dominant Marcus was with his stuff and how good he was. But I think part of it, too, is the club that he was playing. Boy, that was just a mismatch for the Cubs last night.
Yeah, and I think what happens a lot of times, Joe, too, with young teams like that, they know they're not competing for a playoff spot, they're out there looking for a fastball to hit, basically, and they're gonna swing away,
and they got some fastballs, but Marcus's fastball was moving pretty good, and he was locating it. So I mean, we talk about halfway through the game where we were talking about Marcus throwing so many strikes and getting hit with strikes, and well, it's one thing to throw strikes. Everybody knows that throwing strikes is a good thing, but it's not always the end all and be all. They got to be quality strikes. Mm-hmm. Marcus was throwing to both sides of the plate with good movement. Location and movement are huge, and that's why he was so successful last night.
We will be joined, by the way, by Jose Bautista at 12:40. Jose Bautista hitting his 200th home run for the Blue Jays last night, and seems to me, Joe, and I was one of those people that last offseason, and not so much this offseason, but I've thought in the past that maybe Jose Bautista's time with the Blue Jays was coming to an end, that maybe it was time for both sides to move on. And I have to tell you, from what I've seen of Jose Bautista this year on the field, from what I've heard from him off the field, I know there have been glitches where he's been upset with some of the things people said about him, but I think this is the best year Jose Bautista's had with the Blue Jays. I don't know where the numbers will finish. I quite frankly don't care where the numbers finish. To me, he has answered a lot of questions people may have still had about him, about his attitude, about whether or not he wants to be here. Can he really be a leader? Was his nose out of joint last year when Jose Reyes came in? All that stuff that people talked about, frankly, because there wasn't a pennant race to talk about. Jose Bautista, I think, has really shown this year just what a professional he is.
Well, his performance speaks volumes, mm-hmm. and he has just been absolutely outstanding. And mostly what we talk about is offense, but how about on the defensive side? He's played an outstanding right field, the outfield assists, the way he goes to get balls, cuts balls off. He's done a pretty good job. I mean, nobody's perfect, but he's done a pretty good job coming up. And one thing that impresses me about his arm as a right fielder is the accuracy. Most times when Jose Bautista throws to a base, it's pretty accurate. Mm-hmm. One hop, on the money, and that's how you get outfield assists, and that's why he's such a weapon out there. But he made a lot of great sliding catches coming in to the gap, but I think that sometimes gets forgotten because of the tremendous, tremendous offensive output he's provided. And this is through a time, too. Don't forget when Edwin was hurt earlier in the season. This is a major league superstar that is smart enough to not try to do too much, mm-hmm. and that's why you look at the number of walks, and he still does. You still see him take pitches just off the plate for ball four. His pitch recognition is off the charts. I've spoken to Kevin Seitzer about that because I've asked Kevin at times, what is it with a guy like this? I mean, he's so good, mm-hmm. and it starts, of course, he has all the physical tools. Talk about the strength, the bat speed, the swing path and all that, but his pitch recognition and knowledge of the strike zone, I think, too, is off the charts.
Yeah, and I just think for an organization to bring a guy in, to be patient with him, to see something in him that other organizations may not have seen in him, and then to sort of ride the curve with him, ride the wave with him all the way to the point where he's now a regular in the All-Star game and, you know, considered one of the game's premier sluggers. I think it's a pretty good Toronto sports story, and I'm hoping that when people sit down at the end of this season and we try to figure out, okay, what exactly went wrong, what went right, I'm hoping that there's enough of a recognition on the part of ownership and management here that I don't think there's anything really wrong with the core of this team, with Encarnacion, with Bautista, with Reyes. I mean, at some point we may need to talk about a position shift with him, but for now we don't need to have that discussion. I'd like to have those three guys together. I'd like to keep them together, and I'm hoping that people don't sort of sit back and look at this and say, okay, well, it didn't work out. This is 2 years now removed from that big deal with the Marlins. Maybe we ought to start looking at making a move, because I'll tell you aren't going to find Jose Bautista in the free agent market, and you're damn sure not going to be able to trade for him.
I'd be trying to extend him right now.
Totally. If I'm the Blue Jays right now, I'm looking at trying to extend Bautista. I'm looking at trying to extend Encarnacion. And frankly, I'm
sign Melky.
Doing that at the same time that I'm trying to sign Melky Cabrera. It is Baseball Central at noon with Jeff Blair and Joe Siddle. The Jays will continue their three-game series against the Cubs tonight. As we said, Mark Burley against Jake Arrieta. Mark Burley will have to be, he'll be hard-pressed to turn in a performance as fast as Marcus Stroman's performance last night. And that's one other thing I wanted to ask you about Marcus Stroman. His pace. For a young guy, he doesn't seem... when he struggles, he has those moments where you can sort of see him looking up in the air and, okay, what do I have to do to get out of this? But for a young guy, he seems to have a knack of not interrupting his pace. And a lot of young guys will do that. It's, you know, people talk about slowing the game down to your own speed, and I get the sense that Marcus does that.
Well, and I think when you're pitching well, you can't get that ball back
right
from the catcher fast enough. And again, that's another credit to DeHonor in keeping that tempo. That's a good job as a catcher to keep that going. Don't disrupt it. Keep him rolling. A pitcher's in a groove. They want the baseball when they're pitching the way he was last night. And when all your pitches are working, hey, life is pretty good, and you just keep getting that baseball back and keep on firing. And it just could not have gone smoother last night for Marcus. But again, I think he talked about the time of the game. A lot of early outs, a lot of early swings by the Cubs. And
yeah, they didn't step out a lot. They weren't doing a lot of those veteran, I got to step out, got to adjust my shoelace. You know?
I thought in the middle innings, and I think it was after Jose's home run, it's 5-0. And they come back up in the sixth inning, and I believe it was Alcantara that came up and swung at a first pitch fastball, grounded out to short. And I'm just, and I believe I've said it on the broadcast, you know, you're down 5-0, 3-run homer from Jose, just made it 5-0. It's the sixth inning. Stroman is absolutely dominant in dealing. I mean, at some point, you've got to take some pitches, don't you? Now, I'm not saying take some pitches to work a walk, right, because clearly he's all around the strike zone, but just see some pitches. And that's what I think I made the comment too. That's what maybe a more veteran-laden type lineup may do. And I'm not saying you're going to beat Marcus Stroman last night. It's probably not even a chance. But try something. You got to change it up a little bit. You can't just, I think what the Cubs allowed him to do is just continue to just cruise control the rest of the night. And again, it played right into Marcus's hands.
Yeah, like I said, it is a sign of a young team. And you've sort of noticed these things that, you know, once the game gets going, well, let's just keep playing. Well, every now and then, as much as we like the game to be played fast, you don't mind if somebody steps out or finds something in their eye, just something to break up the routine. But, you know, I, you're right. Given the way Marcus Stroman was pitching last night,
might not have mattered.
I told him afterwards that even if that ball had hit you, you were probably still getting free eight innings. Jose Bautista, as we mentioned, became the fifth Blue Jays player to hit 200 home runs in a Blue Jays uniform. He accomplished that last night. Jose Bautista will join us when Baseball Central at noon continues on Sportsnet 590, The Fan, and Sportsnet.
Cooler than Math Club and almost as cool as Chess Club. The Fan Club. Log on to Sportsnet590.ca.
The Marlins, the Mets, the Phillies, and the Braves. The road opponents will be the Mets, Phillies, Braves, and Nationals. And they'll play Victoria Day against the Angels, Canada Day against the Red Sox. That ought to be fun. And Simcoe Day against the Minnesota Twins. But the interesting part of this schedule is Major League Baseball starting its regular season on April 5th. That means that you could potentially have the World Series going into November, which is nothing new. It's happened in the past. Not many people like it because there's obvious concerns with weather, as anybody who remembers covering that Philadelphia-Tampa series will tell you. But, Joe, I think a lot of it, too, is just the fact that the weather, especially in the Northeast, has been so crappy early in the season the past couple of years that I think Major League Baseball's kind of said, you know what, we'll take a chance in having better weather in November than better weather in April.
First week of April, yeah. It's awfully early, and we know what it's like a lot of these places up in the North, and we experienced it in Minnesota early this season. It was ridiculous. It was snowing. It was a snowstorm.
This, of course, will revive the debate about trying to limit the schedule somehow, play more doubleheaders, have more off days, none of which, of course, will work because it's all about revenue, and I guess he could have split doubleheaders, but
that's got to go through the Players Association too, doesn't it?
Yeah, and that would be what they would call a bargainable issue, I do believe. I'd be a fan of it. I'd love to see more doubleheaders. I can still remember going down to Minnesota, going down to the Met, and not the Metrodome, but going down to Metropolitan Stadium and watching doubleheaders in the summer. It was awesome.
But split doubleheaders have to be the worst idea.
Yes, they do.
For players, I guess. I'm talking from a player's perspective. Yeah. That is one long day. Great for the fans.
Yes. But anyhow, so there you go. That's the Major League schedule. And the season will stretch into November next year. So meaningful baseball will take on a much colder meaning next season.
Tough start. Tough start at New York, at
it
Baltimore.
Is.
Come home to Tampa, and we know what their starting rotation is going to look like. And Atlanta and Baltimore.
Yeah, they've got a lot. The first month, it seems to me, and I don't have the schedule in front of me, I could probably pull it up. It's pretty much AL East with the exception of the Braves, is it not?
You've got the Yankees in Baltimore and Tampa, and then the Braves come in, and then you've got Baltimore, Tampa, Boston. So it's, yeah it's heavy, heavy AL East, and it's not going to be easy. Tough first month.
No, it isn't. As we look ahead to next year, You know, we've talked a little bit about obviously the things we'd like to see the Jays do, the things we think they need to do. Let me ask you this. Stroman, Hutchinson, well, admittedly, we haven't seen enough of Norris or Sanchez yet, but do you think there's any way that this team breaks camp next year with three of those young guys in the rotation? You know, I mean, my thinking is, I don't know if you can trade Mark Burley. You might be able to trade R.A. Dickey. I don't know if I want to trade R.A. Dickey, but as I look at Hutchinson, Stroman, I think they're probably going to pick up Hap's option. Let's say that Dickey's still around. I mean, there are people out there, Joe, who are kind of blue skying and saying, hey, you could end up next year having Norris, Sanchez, Hutchinson, and Stroman. I mean, I at times I've been one of those guys, but you've got to step back a bit and go, wait a minute.
Well, I think there's something to be said for having that veteran presence, and right now that's R.A. Dickey and Mark Burley, and they've both been, if you look at the whole season here, they've both been very good. And really, quite frankly, they've anchored the rotation. And I do believe you need that. I don't think you can look at a starting rotation with all young kids and expect to win a division.
No, to me, that says you're rebuilding.
Absolutely.
You're gonna do that.
Absolutely. And it's just very difficult. And that's nothing against these young kids, but I think we all have to agree that it takes time to build as a major league player, to become a proven major league player. We've talked about even as a position player, but especially pitchers. Great performance by Stroman last night, but as we know, he's had some hiccups as well, and those are the growing pains you're going to get with young pitchers. These guys all have great stuff. I'm thinking maybe, does Sanchez start next season in the bullpen again? That's an option. Maybe Daniel Norris starts the season in the bullpen, and then they do what they did to Marcus this year, send him back and build up his pitch count if they need it. You hate to get rid of starting pitching, and I know there's been lots of talk about, do the Blue Jays get rid of one of R.A. Dickey or Mark Burley? I'm sure a lot of teams would jump at R.A. Dickey right now at his price, and even Mark Burley. If teams may jump at that, then Blue Jays may have to cover some of that cost, but is that the route you want to go? What are you trying to do right now? If you're rebuilding, yeah, get rid of them both and move on and go with all the kids. But I don't think so. Not when Jose Bautista and Edwin, Jose, these guys have another couple of years left.
Let me ask you this about Sanchez, because I had a chance to talk to some people yesterday at the ballpark, and one of the people in the organization raised a good point. I mean, I was raving on and on about Sanchez and, you know, how at some point, the guy, I think, could probably be a closer. I think we all agree that. I'm going on and on. And one of the people said to me, you know, the one thing that this individual said I would like to have seen from Sanchez is I would like to have seen him start in the majors so I could see what happens when it gets into the fourth inning, the fifth inning, the sixth inning, second time through or third time through, because his stats in the minors were not great. The longer he was in games, the more teams saw him, I mean, they hit him harder. And, you know, that's not necessarily unusual, but it was pretty pronounced in his case. Is that, I know you can't have everything when you're working young pitchers in, but would that concern you, the fact that we're probably going to finish this year and we're not going to know about Aaron Sanchez, major league starter?
I say you find out about Aaron Sanchez as a major league starter next April.
Okay.
For me, he's in the rotation. To me, he's a starting pitcher. He's been absolutely outstanding out of the bullpen. I almost look at this bullpen stint, much like Marcus went through, as a way of getting acquainted with the major leagues, getting your feet wet, coming in for an inning, not using all his pitches. He's got three quality pitches, in my opinion. I think you got to use them as a starting pitcher. Now, if he fails miserably over the course of a year or a couple of years as a starter, then you may think about the bullpen. But for me, you have to try Aaron Sanchez as a starter.
Yeah, I get, that's what spring training's for, I suppose. That's what spring training
is. You never have enough of this starting pitching. It's a wonderful thing, but at the same time, You stockpile it, but at the same time, there's only five that can start. So what do you do with the extra? You know, there's Jay Happ you just talked about. There's Norris if he's ready. Or do you just leave him in AAA? He's your insurance if somebody goes down. Because inevitably, you have to expect starters to go down. The Blue Jays have been pretty fortunate this year, with the exception of Brandon Morrow.
As we wait, Jose Bautista, I wanted to ask you about, take the conversation back to Stroman a little bit. What do you see in him mechanically as someone who's caught a lot of major league pitchers? You've also caught guys in the bullpen as well. Is there anything about him that would concern you mechanically? Because one of the points I was trying to make, I was on with Wilner last night. One of the points I was trying to make is, at least from up in the press box, he doesn't appear to have the type of delivery that screams surgery. You know, knock on wood. Sean Markham, when he was here, you could watch the first time you saw Sean Markham pitch, you were like, you were putting the, you know, the meter on, because it was only a matter of time before he's going to need surgery, because everything was max effort. I mean, lifting the ball was max effort. Do you see anything from Stroman at all that would concern you mechanically?
I don't, but the concern I have is you just don't know. And then
right.
You look at some guys like a Max Scherzer. He talk about a max effort guy, no pun intended, and the velocity that he throws at. I mean, he looks like an arm injury waiting to happen, but for his sake, knock on wood, he's been relatively healthy and pretty good. You just don't know. And I think what I see in Marcus's delivery is a repeatable delivery. And when you talk about repeatable deliveries, the purpose of that is so that you can be consistent and consistent with your release point. And that's, I see that, Marcus. And a lot of that too comes, I think, with knowledge, knowing yourself. And we talked about, he's a bright young guy, and I think he's very good at that. And I think he can catch on to things. And all those other things we talk about, tinkering with the baseball and manipulating the slider or the curveball, whichever. I think all those things make him that total package. I am really not a big fan of trying to identify injuries. I just think it's the most difficult thing you can do. Now, there's guys with totally violent deliveries that sure are prone to, but with the injuries we've seen in baseball, especially in pitching, it's almost like you never know anymore. It's a gamble.
It's Baseball Central at noon with Joe Siddle and Jeff Blair. Kevin Pillar, John Gibbons made pretty clear to a couple of us yesterday that we asked him about Colby Rasmus. And I mean, he didn't say that there's absolutely no chance in hell Colby Rasmus would set foot in the outfield again, but he certainly made it sound as if it wasn't in the plans, that he's going to ride Pillar and Ghost the rest of the year. And as he said, you know, see what we have. I mean, we play well with them in the lineup. The brand of baseball we play in the field is generally good with them in the lineup. Let's just see what we look at with these guys playing on an everyday basis. Are you seeing anything from Pillar now that we didn't see before that extended stint to AAA? You know, he's talked about he's changed his stance. He's doing different things with his hands. But are you seeing anything else that suggests to you that there has been some development on the part of Kevin Pillar?
Yeah, and I think it's development, and I think it's an adjustment. But one thing I'm seeing less of is chasing bad balls out of the zone. Now, every hitter is still going to chase bad balls, but I think earlier in the season, we saw him do that on a somewhat regular basis. And I spoke to him yesterday just about in general and about the hands and how he changed his stance after the All-Star break and all those different things. He's making adjustments. But one thing that I liked about my conversation with him is he identified that you have to do that. You have to be able to make adjustments. And he, throughout every level of the minor leagues, he's hit everywhere he's been, and he's had to make adjustments on the fly as you go. Now, one thing he did say is it's also nice to get regular at-bats.
Sure.
Because when you're getting regular at-bats, he made a point. He said, you know how nice it is to get that third and fourth and maybe fifth at-bat in a ball game, as opposed to maybe being that pinch runner and getting an at-bat or going in defensively, getting a pinch hit, getting one at-bat. Because when you're playing in that role, you feel like you have to do so much and you want to try so hard to get a hit, and you really come out of your swing. So I think he's found that little comfort zone. And he says, you know, it takes a good 100 at-bats to really get your feet wet at this level, because this is major league pitching. It's different than AAA, and he'd be the first one to admit that. But what I see is he's identifying that. Now, that could just be his pitch recognition and knowledge of the strike zone, but I certainly see a bit of a different hitter right now.
Yeah, he's always been a guy, Joe, and John Gibbons talks about this. He's been a guy who's, I don't know if you'd call him an overachiever, but he's certainly been an under-the-radar guy for the most part.
He reminds me of just that blue-collar guy that is not blessed with all the tools in the world, but then you watch him play and he's got some pop in his bat and he runs well and he goes and gets him in the outfield and the arm's pretty good. So really, he's a pretty darn good player, but I think it's just going to take that time. For me, it's just been an exciting, energetic movement. We saw Anthony Ghost go first to third on a pop-up in shallow center field in Boston the other day.
Mm-hmm.
Last night, Kevin Pillar comes around second base. That ball just gets away. He scoots home. And those are things when you're picking up 90 feet. Talk to Tim Leeper about this a lot, first base coach, and he talked way back in spring training. That's what he's all about, getting reads, trying to gain 90 feet anytime you can. That's how you score runs, by advancing base one base at a time. And we're seeing that. That's what speed does on the base pass. It puts an awful lot of pressure on the defense.
What do you need to see from Mark Burley tonight against this team now? He's facing probably a similar lineup. There may be some, obviously with him being a left-hander, there may be some changes. But the Cubs it's in their DNA to swing early, swing often. Are we looking at a potential 40-minute game with Mark Burley going out there against these guys?
I look for Mark Burley to be Mark Burley. I don't think it changes a whole lot. Now, he went through a little lull there around the All-Star break for a handful of starts where it looked like maybe he had hit the wall, gotten tired. And when I say that, he lost his sharpness, his crispness, and mm-hmm. he has to be good. He has to be on the corners of the plate. He has to stay away from the middle. All pitchers do, but especially when you don't have that impact type stuff and the velocity that Mark has. But the last couple starts, boy, he's looked like the Burley of earlier this season, and he's been very good. He's got that cutter working in on the righties. He's slow curveball, change up, two seamer. He's staying on the corners. When he stays away from the middle of the plate and he has his command, that's why he was so good the first half of the season. He lost it for a little while, but it almost looks like he's gained a second win.
I wonder if following up, seeing a guy like Stroman with throw as hard as he does and with that stuff, and now Mark Burley comes in and it's going to be soft, location. As a player, would you rather have seen the softer thrown guy second or the softer thrown guy first? If you're playing back-to-back games, who would you rather see first?
Catching or hitting?
Hitting.
Couldn't hit either one.
Oh, all right. Well, all right, there you go.
No, you know what? I think I'm not so sure. I know a lot of people make a lot of that. I really don't. You know, it'd be interesting to talk to, say, some Blue Jay hitters, and you face a flamethrower one day and a soft guy the next day. Does it really matter? I can't see it making a lot of difference. It's mm-hmm. a new day. You're going through your whole preparation again. You do the same every day. And when hitters go through their preparation and batting practice and everything, they're preparing for that night's starter and mm-hmm. how that starter may approach you because they've got lots of videotape. But at the same time, they're working on their swing and their swing path and their approach to the baseball. So I'm not sure that that changes a ton day to day.
Well, it appears as if we've struck out with Jose Bautista. Which maybe we'll get a reschedule for later in the week. But at that point, who knows? Maybe we'll have 201 home runs with the Blue Jays. That is it for Baseball Central today. And don't forget, Game 2 of this three-game series against the Cubs goes tonight, 7:07 first pitch at the Rogers Center. Mark Burley against Jake Arrieta. Jerry Howarth, Joe Siddle, Mike Wilner have the call on the radio and on the boob tube. It'll be Buck Martinez and Pat Tabler. Jays going for their second win against the Cubs. The series wraps up tomorrow night. And, one eye on the Jays and Cubs, one eye on the out-of-town scoreboard. That's pretty much the point of the season that we're at. For Joe Siddle, I'm Jeff Blair saying thanks so much for joining us in Baseball Central at noon. As always, we're brought to you by Home Hardware. Have a great day, everybody.